Hi, everyone. It's Judy Warner. Welcome back to the On Track podcast. Today, I'll be talking to an SI and PI integrity guru whose name is Istvan Novak. This year, Istvan was awarded Engineer of the Year at DesignCon 2020, and he'll have lots to share about his illustrious career, and we'll plug you into lots of good resources for his employer, Samtech. So lean in, enjoy. I'll see you on the other side.
Welcome to Altium's On Track podcast, where we talk to leaders about PCB design, tackling subjects ranging from schematic capture all the way to the manufacturing floor. I'm your host, Judy Warner. Please listen in every week and subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all your favorite podcast apps. And be sure to check out the show notes at altium.com/podcast, where you can find great resources and multiple ways to connect with us on social media.
Well, Istvan, thank you so much for joining us today. We look forward to having this conversation with you.
Thank you for having me.
So, Istvan, I've actually known about you for some time, and I got to meet you very briefly at DesignCon this year, and then saw after the event that you were awarded Engineer of the Year. So congratulations on that. And
thank you.
That is a wonderful award. And we have several friends in common, and they all say lovely things about you. So I look forward to sharing you with our audience. So Istvan, why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about how you became a power integrity expert, and then tell us a little bit about Samtech.
Well, so I have to start many years ago. When I was a little kid, my late father, who was a physician, but he also had other diplomas, like he was a chemist and also pharmacist. He grew up in the Great Depression, so his parents told him to get real-life professions as well. So he became a plumber, electrician, carpenter, and when we were little kids, not even in elementary school with my elder brother, he showed us how to make motors, Leclanché batteries, and so on. It was fascinating. So that's what got us started. Years later, you know, we went through high school, tinkering with all sorts of gadgets. We jammed neighbors' TV and radio sets with homemade oscillators and, you know, all sorts of radio amateurish and, you know, the little home hobby electronics that was available back then in the early 60s. And then my elder brother entered the university. I was still in the high school. I'm trying to remember which year was it, probably 1970, so 50 years ago. I just went after him to find out where he goes to study. And in one of the building's rooftops, I saw very strange-looking antennas that I never saw before. And I just went in, started to ask, and I ended up at the Space Research Group, which at that point already made small scientific satellite electronics. And that's where I started my professional career.
It's amazing how so many of you engineers started out with just tinkering as children, and then you just exactly. Basically followed your curiosity. So tell us a little bit about, for our listeners that may not be acquainted with Samtech, tell us a little bit about the company that you're working for now.
So Samtech is a wonderful company. I joined it 2 years ago, and the primary motivation for me to get the challenging and you know good environment to continue to learn, which I enjoyed at my previous workplaces. So I didn't mention earlier that I did work in the academia for 21 years at the university, did research and teaching, and then some microsystems. At all of these places, I had wonderful colleagues, and it was very hard to leave. unfortunately, as we all know, the computer industry has been changing a lot. So that's when a couple of years ago, the opportunity came to join Semtech, where I had very good friends. And, you know, signal integrity legends like Scott McMurro, Rich Mellitz, and, you know, the list is very long. And that, again, gave me the opportunity to learn and be proactive. And I'm very glad to be here. Now, interestingly, when we ask around people what they know about Semtech, they don't necessarily know all of the interesting things that being inside we all see. So probably the flagship products are the high value add connectors and cable assemblies. But the product portfolio is very, very broad. The high value add, the flyover cable assemblies, which are used for the highest speed communication equipment today, and a lot of other connectors that's where I find, again, very interesting, intriguing work, and that's what makes it very pleasurable to work here.
Yeah, I think that even just talking to you before the podcast, I had no idea, you know, how many people did that interesting work. When I think of Semtech, often I do just think of high-speed connectors or cable assembly. So I was really interested to learn about that. For our listeners, I'm going to share some of the link on the flyover cables and some of the resources. Also, we'll probably talk about this a little bit later, but they've been doing an ongoing webinar series called Geek Speak. And Iswan has shared that link with me. So I'll put that for you down below. There's live ongoing, and there's also the recorded on demand. And I think you might want to really tap into that if you enjoy sort of SIMPI content.
And it's nothing marketing. It's pure technical.
Yeah. How did you go from being curious about that antenna on the roof at university to really becoming more and more interested specifically with power integrity?
Well, I was going in big steps. Obviously, there were many other details. By the time I got to the university as a high school student, it was already, you know, through tinkering and hobby electronics, I already built little pocket radios, and it included also DC-DC converters, which I have to admit back then I had no clue about. I just read the hobby electronics magazines. I saw the circuit diagrams. I got the components. I built it. But can you imagine that back then I didn't even have an oscilloscope? The only measuring instrument we had back then at home was a little voltmeter. That was all. And then we had to observe functionally whether a circuit is working, whether it's smoking. Then we turned it off, of course. So it was just coincidence, by the way, that the university team, which I came across sort of accidentally by looking up the rooftop, that team did everything electronics for small scientific satellites. So they did the onboard transceivers. They did the antennas, the small antennas which were on the satellite, but also included the power electronics. So DC-DC converters taking the solar battery power, that was part of the job. So that's where, step by step, able to learn the real engineering side of it and do it professionally, not just by tinkering.
Well, yours is a common story, but You know, as we were talking again while preparing for this, I've had the great pleasure to be exposed to some wonderful university teams. And what I've noticed is this tinkering these students get to do on these teams, like the one you mentioned. If our listeners are wondering where Isfahan's charming accent is from, he is from Hungary and he went to university in Budapest. And so there's a Pico satellite team there, and I will also share that link below. And they're making these tiny, tiny, you know, whatever you want to call them, Pico satellites, pocket satellites, very, very successfully, and they're working. And I think
it's just amazing what technology can do today and what students can do today. The tiny little satellites, 2 inch by 2 inch by 2 inch, 2 inch cube, literally you can put it into your pocket, and that has all of the electronics that is needed.
And they're students. Yes. Can you imagine you being students. A student and making this kind of sophisticated?
Now, of course, it needs guidance. And I'm very pleased that my mentor, who was my first mentor and then tutor back then in the 70s, is still there working actively, giving guidance, and he's the spirit of this team.
Well, I think these are the kids that get put to work right out of college because they've had all these hands-on experience, right? And so if you just take your basic core, you know, studies, you don't get that hands-on, which I think is a really enriching opportunity. All right, let's talk a little bit more about you and some of our in common friends. Lee Ritchie, Steve Sandler, Eric Bogatin keep telling me this thing that it used to be, especially in regards to power integrity, that most of that measurement and most of the problem was coming from a system level. But now they're saying it's coming from the board level, which of course is our audience. So, and also it's not necessarily all the really fancy high speed stuff. And there also, Lee Ritchie had made a comment to me that I was really surprised by. And he said, power integrity is now actually more important than signal integrity. And it seems like people have been talking about signal integrity for so long, but he's saying, actually, this is a bigger problem. Can you tell us why people are saying that and sort of what the approach is for most engineers relative to power integrity?
Well, so people who practice it, they feel the pain. And that's why we all feel and we understand that it is a big challenge. It's a growing challenge. It's not going anywhere. If I wanted to summarize the reason, probably the fundamental reason is that and I'm speaking about sort of today, because quite honestly, 20, 30 years ago, signal integrity was in the same position. It was sort of new, not fully understood, not enough help and support. So people struggled and it took time to get it right. There are still many signal integrity challenges today, but basically, the reason why today signal integrity feels a little bit easier because over the years, a lot of helping and supporting elements have come along, just to name a few. So if someone needs to design a high-speed link, most of the time we can adhere to or we can pick a signaling standard. In power integrity, there is no such thing. There are no standards to adhere to. There are no specifications for most of the designs. It is all self-imposed requirements by people who do it. And I can tell you that just to get the input data to do it properly is a pain in itself. But as other people mentioned to you, if power integrity is not okay, then nothing else will be working. Now, In extreme case, the circuit may blow up, but most of the time it's not that extreme. It just may not function well. So will power integrity get to that phase where signal integrity is today? I'm not quite sure. And the reason why it may not come to that point, because power integrity is fundamentally different from signal integrity in the sense that when I speak about this in my longer courses where we have days to elaborate on it, my illustration is that signal integrity is a one-dimensional problem. One-dimensional in the sense that even if the traces, the cables, the interconnects do take a turn and we have to go through different directions, the designer should know where the signal is supposed to go. And in that sense, once we know the path, it becomes a one-dimensional problem. Power, on the other hand, is very different because the minute noise gets into our printed circuit boards, we typically use planes to distribute the power. It's like throwing pebble into the pond. It is a minimum of two-dimensional expansion of the noise wave, but we also have multiple layers in the PC board, vertical vias, so at least two, sometimes two and a half or three-dimensional problem, and everything is connected. Again, in signal integrity, typically we deal with the passive interconnects, even though more and more we consider and bring in the active device features, but when it comes to measurement simulations, we tend to stop at the silicon boundaries. With power, everything is connected, also through the active circuits. So the segmentation, the isolation that comes more naturally in signal integrity cannot be done in power integrity. So whether at any point later in time, we will have the luxury to have standards or more ready specifications to do the design, I'm not sure. So that's actually good news for people doing this work, because I believe this will be needed for a long, long time.
So is any body like IEEE or IPC, anyone working on standardizing these guidelines?
Well, this is a very good question. I mean, segments and elements of it are being done, like tests and measurements here and there. But the design itself, it is overarching between the active devices, the silicons, and the package, and the printed circuit board, sometimes going even further out, all the way to the AC mains. So, trying to create a standard for something which reaches out to so many things simultaneously, that doesn't seem to be an easy task.
Well, and as you mentioned earlier, these are custom to each product, right?
Exactly.
That's challenging. You had said something that surprised me, which was, well, two things. One, you mentioned that most engineers today tend to think of power integrity sort of as an afterthought. What did you mean by that?
Well, so the fact that there is no specification and requirement, it means that whoever has to do it eventually, the person, let's suppose the person is just a junior person starting his or her career, of course, the person has to be given the task. So someone will give the task, please do this design. But with the design task, there will be no requirement other than, well, make sure that the circuit works, because there is hardly anything else to go by. So for that reason, people have to rely on application notes and supports, which do become more and more readily available. And some companies do way better job than others, but we have to understand that, you know, since I've been living through this, I definitely understand the challenge on the other side as well. And even though we can and should point out that data is lacking, I understand why is it lacking. So we shouldn't really blame the other side. This is what life brings us, because there is no simple, easy way to collect and get all of the data. So for that reason, people try to do the easy thing. They try to design everything else for which they have the specification requirements, they have data easily available. And then, oops, okay, yeah, well, we have to supply that with power. And that's how many times it is just an afterthought. Just a very interesting tidbit from my past. When I started to do the very first server design 20-somewhat years ago, I was given the task to design the power distribution system for a CPU module. And that CPU module already back then consumed about 0.5 kilowatt of power. And the system owner, the system designer showed me, okay, so this is the approximate placement of the major components. And I asked, okay, so where are the power components? Well, the system engineer pointed out a block reserved for the DC-DC converter, but there was no place or room or placeholder for bypass capacitors. And when I asked, well, so where are the bypass capacitors? Well, we have room for 16, and those are the tiny little placeholders. And then I noted the little dots. So instead of 16, that board ended up probably with 3,200 bypass capacitors.
Wow.
It is very eye-opening when someone goes through systematically the requirements. In that sense, sometimes it is still afterthought, and we need to understand that people are in a time crunch. So when we have to do a design quickly, then we try to do first things where we have the data, and then power becomes an afterthought.
Well, two things. You had mentioned another thing to me that was puzzling, again, mostly because I'm not an engineer and I only sort of understand conceptually what you're all facing. But that even at low frequency from DC to DC, you have big problems. And at least in my mind, again, not being an engineer, I wouldn't think that's where they would show up.
Absolutely. And, you know, again, I don't want to refer back to the distant past too much, but the very first real-life experience of it was, I did mention that I did, little home electronics as a schoolboy. And in one of the radios I did in the very late 60s, I had to create a DC-DC converter. Again, that was in the time when I had no clue how they worked. I had to have a DC-DC converter to change the voltages. And I learned the very hard way that for a radio, those DC-DC converters can emit a lot of noise. And ever since then, the problem is not going away. The switching frequencies keep going up. The fast transient ringing is creating high frequency jitter at the clock oscillators, and even PCI signals can be upset by those ringings. But even at very low frequencies, there are surprises. And I don't know if you recall one other example that I might have mentioned is quite recently, following some discussions on the SI list, questions came up about return current paths for traces in PC boards. Mm-hmm. And You know, quite honestly, even though these are very simple things and we have to understand the physics is not changing, the conditions and the applications are changing, that I was learning quite recently new things about, you know, how the frequency dependency shows up in the inductance and the return path associated with traces on the PC boards. And we are speaking about audio frequencies, literally. Now, the reason why this is probably news and probably a lot of people don't need to worry about it, because high-speed signals today do have coding, so whether there is very low frequency noise added to it, most of the time it won't matter. So in that sense, that's the good news, but other than that, it is learning new things every day, literally.
I really admire engineers. It's like a puzzle whose pieces are changing all the time. And
yes, and, right? And you probably also learned from people that even experts whom from outside you think know a lot, they don't agree on certain fundamental things, and that's almost, okay. That's how we learn.
You're right, and it's those debates. You know, we have a conference, Altium Live, and it was really interesting to observe the people who we think of experts and gurus sort of debating. but they're, like you said, is great value in that debate. I'm thinking, Moy, that must be really challenging for young, you know, or engineers earlier in their careers to hear their mentors, you know, in trying to figure out, like, how do I make it work, you know? So, like I said, it's a puzzle that the pieces keep changing, and they change with technology, and they also change with, as you said, the environment that they're put in, right? The type of box they're put in, the heat, you know, altitude, on and on and on. So I think it's fascinating. So you had talked about the challenge of having proper modeling. And, you know, what would you recommend to the design engineers that listen to this podcast? You know, maybe resources to plug into, or products to plug into, or resources to plug into, so they could get good access to data through modeling and simulation to help troubleshoot some of these things?
Well, so again, it goes back to the fundamentals of how we make a good design. And a good design needs some understanding, it needs some simulations, it needs some validation measurements. And so the understanding part is what is evolving constantly, which is good, and that's part of life. Luckily, the simulation and measurement tools are also evolving. When it comes to power integrity, luckily, today, simulation tools are quite numerous. And, you know, which tool actually to pick, it depends on a lot of things. Many of them are not really technical, so that's why in a podcast like this, it may not worth discussing it, because
I see
there are company preferences which may override all of the technical reasons. But the good news is that there is a choice, and pretty much regardless of what we want to simulate, we can find simulation tools to do it. The challenge is obviously learning how to write the input numbers correctly, how to drive them properly. You know, it reminds me when we did one of the books we wrote with my friend Jason Miller, the frequency characterization of power distribution networks. So that in that book, there is a section to deal with simulated models. And back then it was mostly HFSS, the High Frequency Structure Simulator 3D Dimensioner. It is still around today from ANSYS. Back then it was ANSOFT, obviously. Right. But back then there was a running joke, which is still around among people who use these tools, that it doesn't matter what you want to match the simulation results to, you just tweak the knobs and you will get an agreement. And the interesting thing is, it is absolutely true, because the generic tools are generic enough that by adjusting the parameters, we can pretty much match a very wide range of things. The real knowledge where it comes in, to learn the tool to the level that we can explain and we can justify what was the choice of the parameters we used for the tool. A different degree, it is also true for the measurements. There is no perfect simulation, there is no perfect measurement. Just the errors and the problems are different in simulations and in measurements. Luckily, in power measurements, also companies are becoming more proactive to help us. You mentioned good friends in the industry. If people need good accessories and good power distribution measurement, little pieces that is not easy to find, then, for instance, PicoTest has excellent accessories. In terms of major instruments, I am very pleased to see that in these days now, all major companies are coming out with power-related instruments, which was not the case 20 somewhat years ago. Just back to the same example, when I had to design the first server modules and time came to validate it, there was no instrument from any company to do the validation. So that's when the methodology and the entire process had to be worked out almost from scratch.
Well, you mentioned PicoTest, and Steve Sandler has been a guest here, and I think I will share Steve's recent book on power integrity, and hopefully that will be a good resource. Other than that, sounds like it's a matter of taste, not only on simulation, but always, you know, could be, right, Keysight, Tektronix, you know, all the Rode, all the typical instruments that are out there. And it sounds like it's just a matter of preference and taste, you know, which way you go. But I like, if you have other books to share that you've written, Isfahan, or that, again, young engineers can tap into to really learn about the science behind, you know, why things are working the way they're working, be happy to share it here.
Well, so one easy to access thing is on my website that I maintain, there is a list of suggested references.
Okay,
books,
great.
And websites and links, and that's free. I know that in these days there are many things which are nominally free, but we usually have to pay with our personal data for it.
Yeah.
No one has to sign up for anything if they want to visit my website. It's all there. It's a kind of giving back to the community.
Yeah, let's talk about your website. And I'm also going to share, the way I think I first became acquainted with Isfahan is I got connected to the SI free list, and there is every kind of guru you know on signal and power integrity seems like they're on this channel, and I'm going to share that link below if you want to subscribe through your email and sort of track those conversations. But you, in that, I saw that you just celebrated not too long ago, I think 20 years of the website you've been maintaining on signal integrity. So why don't you tell us about that? Why'd you launch it? What's there? You mentioned a few things, but share with us a little bit more about your website.
You know that the predecessor of this was created in March of 1999, so it's a little bit more than 20 years by now, so probably I have to take down that banner. But, you know, throughout my career, I was so lucky to have good mentors, good friends, people who helped me. So I thought it was time to give back, and this was one way to maintain the website. So I pay for the domain name. I am the webmaster. A lot of the content is created by me. And it is just out there with a section where people can download papers that I was involved in. The page that I mentioned already, a separate page with all the links and books and company names that people may find useful. There is a little section with tools. Those are simplified versions of the tools that I use in my longer training courses, where simple things can be illustrated. Those are all posted there free, and people can use them, learn them, how they are constructed and what they do. And basically, that's it. There is one section I added that a few years ago where I put up my blogs, the Quiet Power blogs. So EDN, the SI Journal, and the PCBO7 are the places where these articles are posted first, and then a few weeks later, I post them on that site.
You make a good point there. I've shared it before, but I think I'll share it here again, which is the SI Journal, the 007 website. Those are always great ways to access sort of yes. The latest. So, and what a great service, which is sort of the sentiments I was hearing from your peers about just thank you so much for building that site, because with all these sort of puzzle pieces, it's hard to, you know, sort of curate content where you can just go and dig in and have many sources. So I know that's been an incredible value to the engineering industry. So thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure and it's fun. But I can tell you that it is also helpful for me, because it may sound stupid, but if I am looking for an old paper that I wrote years ago, I go to the website, and there it is.
That's nice. It's all contained in one bucket, right. So to speak, so exactly. You don't have to go digging all over your computer for it.
Exactly.
So you can find your own stuff. I need something like that. I need a bucket. Well, I think that sort of wraps up our conversation, Isfahan. This was really great, and I really look forward to sharing a lot of these resources with our audience, and I'm sure they'll find it of great value. Is there any last thoughts you'd like to share before I let you go?
Well, just back to where we began. Mm-hmm. The team where I started my career, mm-hmm. They launched that Pico satellite in December. It is still working up there 200 miles above Earth, and it was actually the first Pico satellite that was working, because a few others were launched before, but none of them were operational. And this team created the first electrosmog map of the globe. It's posted online, so people can watch it. And it's fascinating to see how much electromagnetic radiation goes up to hundreds of miles above the Earth. And I am very glad that the Engineer of the Year Award grant went there. Just yesterday, it arrived finally. So it is at the destination now.
Thank you for reminding me of that. I will also share a press release that Isfahan shared with me on being nominated the Designer of the Year, which is a great honor. But as he mentioned, what's nice is he will get that grant that he will get, you know, feedback into these students. So, well, we appreciate your heart and your love for helping people that started when you were a young man and continues to this day. And And just thanks so much for your service and your contribution to the industry.
Thank you very much, Judy, for having me. Thank you.
It's my pleasure. To our audience, thanks so much for joining today. I hope you enjoyed this conversation between myself and Istvan Novak of Samtec. There's going to be a lot of good resources in the show notes, so go on over there and dig in. The website, SI List, the student team, we're going to share it all there, the links to Samtec, GeekSpeak. So this is going to be really rich for you to dig into and tap into some resources. So thank you again for joining us. We hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time. Until then, remember to like, subscribe, or tell us your comments. We look forward to being with you then. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and always remember to stay on track.